Good morning, everyone. Today we're going to be reading from Proverbs chapter 2. And if you're quick enough, you can also look up John chapter 14 in the New Testament. We'll just be reading a couple of verses from there in a moment. But first we're going to read from Proverbs chapter 2 on page 636. My sons, if you accept my words and store up my commands within you, turning your ear to wisdom and applying your heart to understanding, and if you call out for insight and cry aloud for understanding, and if you look for it as for silver and search for it as for hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom, and from his mouth come knowledge and understanding. He holds victory in store for the upright. He's a shield to those whose walk is blameless, for he guards the course of the just and protects the way of his faithful ones. Then you will understand what is right and just and fair, every good path. For wisdom will enter your heart, and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. Discretion will protect you, and understanding will guard you. Wisdom will save you from the ways of wicked men and from men whose words are perverse, who leave the straight paths to walk in dark ways, who delight in doing wrong and rejoice in the perverseness of evil, whose paths are crooked and who are devious in their ways. It will save you also from the adulteress, from the wayward wife with her seductive words, who has left the partner of her youth and ignored the covenant she made before God. From her house leads down to death, and her paths to the spirits of the dead. None who go to her return or attain the paths of life. Thus you will walk in the ways of good men and keep to the paths of the righteous, for the upright will live in the land, and the blameless will remain in it. But the wicked will be cut off from the land, and the unfaithful will be torn from it. Now, if we turn forward to John chapter 14, and this is on page 1082. And this is where Jesus is talking with his disciples and he's comforting them. So we're just going to be reading the first six verses. And I'm sure one verse in particular you will know already. Do not let your hearts be troubled. Trust in God. Trust also in me. In my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, I would have told you. I am going there to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you also may be where I am. You know the way to the place where I am going. Thomas said to him, Lord, we don't know where you are going, so how can we know the way? Jesus answered, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. Amen. And may God bless this word to us.
Well, we're going to be looking at the second chapter of Proverbs today as we continue our occasional series on this great book of the Old Testament. Let me just read as our text, verse 8. God guards the course of the just and protects the way of his faithful ones. Just before we get into this chapter, though, let's set it in context. So let's try, which we always need to do, to realize how relevant this word is to us, how much we need the help of God's word, this food for our souls that takes up such a large part of our weekly services. I've been reading recently a number of books about pastoral care, ministers writing about some of the people they deal with. It's always fascinating to read descriptions of specific cases. Let me just read a few of these as quickly as I can. Here's one minister writing about some of his congregation. The first young man had a real issue with guidance for the rest of his life. And I spent an hour listening to him as he told me about his struggles and his confusion. He's a student. What could he do when he graduates? And how can he know what guidance is and what it looks like? How does he know how God will tell him what to do in the future? I saw another young man in my congregation who's just gone through a relationship breakup. We spend a long time thinking through God's will and purpose in all his current pain and future plan, helping him work through his feelings in a matter that has caused great pain to him. I met another man one day who had a real issue with his own identity before God, was struggling with pornography and strong self-loathing. Another man I met the same day spent an hour telling me about his anger and his lack of forgiveness. But then later, he confessed that he was struggling with same-sex attraction. All these conversations were really hard. I'm a broken man myself, speaking with broken men. It became clear to me that a lot of the preaching and teaching they have been given was rather passive and assumed rather than known and owned. And then just to stress the point again, here's another minister writing about his congregation, writing about some of the women in his church. One common issue among these women was the busy nature of their lives, not only in the workplace, but more worryingly in our church. Our church has many activities throughout the week, and I was detecting a degree of spiritual burnout in some of them. Some seemed to be getting weary of the work rather than just weary in the work. One of the most important lessons is that we should never make assumptions about those in our churches who look from the outside as though all is well. I was surprised by some of those who were struggling in the faith, who looked as though they were doing fine, particularly those heavily involved in the church. I had wrongly assumed that since they were so engaged in the church, they must be making progress spiritually. What a range of people. People worn out in the work of the church. People struggling with deep, private, personal issues that they'd never told anybody else about. People who are very active in Christian work, but are not growing in the Christian life. What a mix of people we are. And, you know, I've not been reading your mail. I've not been prying into your lives or questioning others about you. But I would be amazed if there wasn't just as big a range of people, and perhaps even bigger, in our congregation this morning. That's what the book of Proverbs is for. It's about learning how to live well, how to cope, how to get through life, how to get along in life in the service of Jesus. The chapter that we read and the bit from John's Gospel underlined the point, frequently refers to what it calls the way or the paths. Proverbs is very big on that. 75 times in Proverbs, the word for a way, a road, a path, occurs. And even more often if you count some other words for the same thing. Life is a journey. Being a Christian is to be on a pilgrim's progress. It's a journey. And it's a long journey. In fact, it's a lifelong journey. We acknowledge that even by the things we sing One of our favourite hymns for many people is, "Guide me, O thou great Jehovah, pilgrim through this barren land." And there the hymn, William Williams' great hymn, leads us on right through to death itself and on to glory. The Christian life is a life journey, a whole life journey. And that's what this chapter of Proverbs is about. How can we make a lifelong journey with wisdom? I want to look at two things very quickly this morning. Number one is, this chapter shows us why wisdom is a lifelong journey. You know, why can't we just get wisdom? You know, why can't we go to church one day and the minister will stand up and say, "Today the subject is wisdom. And by the end of this service, you'll all have wisdom. You'll not have any more problems with it. You can go out of that door and that's done and dusted. You've got the badge. You've been there. You've done that. That's settled." But Proverbs is saying that wisdom is a lifelong journey. Why? Well, it's implied or stated again and again in this second chapter. The reason why wisdom is a lifelong journey is that getting wisdom is hard work. Look at a little word that occurs several times in the opening verses. Verse 1, "My son, if you accept my words and store up my commands within you, turning your ear to wisdom and applying your heart to understand, and if you call out for insight and cry aloud for understanding, and if you look for it as for silver and search for it as for hidden treasure, then you will understand." It doesn't just say, if you listen to this word, I'm only going to say it once, then you'll get wisdom. No, the if that begins this chapter is a long, repeated, emphasized, multifaceted if you do all these things. It's not simple. There's not a simple single button that you can push. It's actually hard work. In the book of Proverbs, let's give you a little technical thing that help you, perhaps not just in Proverbs, but with Psalms too. Most of these verses in Proverbs are couplets. There's two statements. For instance, verse 1 says, "My son, if you accept my words and store up my commands within you." Two things. They're very similar. Accept my words, store up my commands within you. But they're not exactly the same. And in most places where you get these little couplets, what they're really saying is, if you do this, or this is true, and even more if you do this. If you do this, and let's press it home a bit deeper, do this. So verse 1 says, if you accept my words, and not just that, but even store up my commands within you. Don't just say, yeah, those are good words, but you say, I must remember those. I must store them up within me. I recognize that they're useful. I agree with them. They're true, but I need them, and I will need them in the future, and I must make a real effort to remember them. See, it's working at listening. It's a story of a little boy in class who was obviously daydreaming a bit, and the teacher said to him, "Johnny, are you listening?" And he said, "Yes, I'm listening, but I'm not hearing." And Proverbs 2 says you've got to listen and hear, and not only hear but remember. And then verse 2 goes on, turning your ear to wisdom. And not just your ears, but your heart. Applying your heart to understanding. This isn't just something that goes into one ear and goes out the other, as we say. But something that actually goes through to the heart. The heart is the way the Bible speaks of your character. The real you. the deep you that very few people really thoroughly know. These words of mine must not just go into your ears. Oh, yes, I remember hearing that once. But they must actually get into the control room of your life. Get into the nerve center, the emotional center, the personality center of your life. And that's hard work. Study, apply your heart to it. And then verse 3 says, and if you call out for insight and cry aloud for understanding. Well, obviously in a Bible context that includes prayer. We must pray. And not just pray, but cry aloud. It's something that really is important, that really matters to us. Something that we're almost desperate to have. But I don't think it only refers to praying. So much of this book of Proverbs says wisdom is something that we learn together. Wisdom is something that we learn from each other. In those little pastoral extracts I gave you at the beginning of the sermon, two at least of the men that the pastor wrote about had never told anybody about the things they were struggling with. And they cried aloud to him in that pastoral situation. And that, we hope, was a help in their journey in the Christian life through those troubles. We need to ask for help. We need to open to one another. One of the sayings in Proverbs is, in the multitude of counselors, there is safety. That is, we should have not just one person that we ask for advice to, because, you know, no one person in this world is perfect. But we should have friends, plural, and talk to them. And that can be very difficult, very painful. We feel very vulnerable when we open up. But if we're going to have wisdom, we've got to learn to overcome that reluctance. And that's hard work. And then verse 4 puts it in with a very common biblical analogy. If you look for it as for silver and search as for hidden treasure. If you go digging for it. If you're patient and always looking for somewhere. You know, so many of these treasure hunt programs you see on the television, archaeological things, they think they know where it is. They go and they dig, and the first time, the second time, they come up with nothing. And they keep at it. And sometimes it's after years of work. Wisdom is a life journey. The search for wisdom is a lifelong journey. Because it's a big task. It's a huge task. That's why one of the things that Proverbs loves to challenge us about is the danger. Is that me making problems with this or not? No. One of the big things that Proverbs likes to warn us about is laziness. Laziness. The sluggard who lies on his bed. The lazy farmer who doesn't fancy going out and ploughing and sowing today because the clouds look a bit threatening. It might just rain. Any excuse to avoid work. And that's deadly, because at the very heart of the Christian's life is the hard work of seeking wisdom. There's another reason why wisdom is a lifelong pursuit. You'll find that in verses 9 to 11. This shows up more in what wisdom does when we find it. The if of verses 1 to 4 has now given way to the then. If you pursue it, you'll find wisdom, and you'll find out what wisdom means. Wisdom goes deep. Wisdom works its way through. Then you will understand what is right and just and fair, every good path. What Proverbs is really saying there is that in life, the great concern of the believer is to do what is right in God's sight. That means, for one thing, you and I need a conscience which has been re-educated to do what is right, to treat people in the right way, when to speak and challenge somebody, when not to, when to do this or to go along with people in doing that. Is that all right? Or is it something that will compromise my life as a Christian? That's a daunting and a long, drawn-out task. For one thing, because Christians don't agree among themselves about what is right and what is not right. So it's not simply a matter of saying, oh, I never knew the rule. Oh, you give me that bit of software, press the button, it tells me what's right, what's wrong. No, you have to work through these things. And then it's not just a matter of knowing what's right and wrong, it's a matter of loving what is right and what is wrong. Verse 10 could be translated, wisdom will penetrate your heart. So that you won't just know a list of rights and wrongs, but you will love what is right and hate what is wrong. You will be drawn to right ways and what is fair. Every good path, every decision in life, every decision in your business world, in employment relations, in leisure activities, in family life, what is right? How to bring up your children? How to deal with teenagers through those difficult years? What's the good path? What's a good course to follow? What's a good choice, a good decision, a good call to make? That's what wisdom will give you. But it doesn't just come like that. It takes time to saturate, to penetrate, to soak, to permeate our whole lives. It's wonderful if it will do that, but it's not done quickly. Proverbs is constantly warning us against being simplistic. Much of the book of Proverbs from chapter 10 on is these sentences, these sort of one-verse statements. But you might say, well, that's simple, straightforward, but they're all jumbled up. It doesn't say, right, well, the first lesson is how to deal with marriage. So we've got a whole lot of sayings about marriage. Work your way through those, and then we'll move on to employment. No, when you read Proverbs, all these verses are jumbled up. There'll be one about money and riches, one about the king, one about talking to your wife, one about accepting correction in your own life, one about moods and a broken heart. And they're all there because, you see, in life, these things don't come to us one at a time. Problems don't wait until we've worked our way through all the simpler problems before the big ones turn up. Problems get thrown at us, all mixed up and all mingled up. There's an old proverb in not in the Bible, but in country life, that bad things come in threes. And there's something in that. In life doesn't give you sort of one problem at a time to deal with. Things aren't simple. It takes an awful lot of work and painful endurance and energy, a whole lifetime. And another reason why Proverbs says that gaining wisdom is a lifelong struggle is because one of the great enemies of wisdom is pride. Pride comes before a fall. Okay? Obvious, yeah? Good, well, let's get rid of pride. But how do you get rid of pride from your own heart, for your own life? And do we say, I've really been working on humility, and I have to say I've made great progress. How do we deal with pride? It's a lifelong battle. It's a long struggle. And then 2 Proverbs says, wisdom is a lifelong journey. Let's look at verse 12 onwards, because it goes against the grain. My grandfather used to tell a story about a farmer's wife who didn't come home one day after going to market. And she was missing, and in the middle of the night, they suddenly decided this must be serious. So they went out And they searched everywhere along the road back to the market town, across the fields and down the lanes of Devon. And some of them even went to the nearby river and began looking where the road crossed the river and so on. The old farmer came out eventually, his wife was missing, and he saw them searching. And he said to them, "You be looking the wrong way. You looking downstream from the bridge. Her's so contrary, if she'd fallen in the river, she'd float upstream." Well, we live in a world where the flow of the stream is contrary to the Christian life. The flow of the world is perverse. That's the word in verse 12. Wisdom will save you from the ways of wicked men. We were singing about them in Psalm 1. Sitting, walking, standing with the foolish men, the mockers, the scorners. Perverse really conveys the idea of people who deliberately set out to ridicule and undermine what is right and true. People who want to sweep you in the opposite direction to the one that is right. These people leave the straight paths to walk in dark ways, who delight in doing wrong and rejoice in the perverseness of evil, whose paths are crooked and are devious in their ways. That's a very strong element of our culture today in this country. These stand-up comics and the various programs seem to be so many of them when you turn your television on. They are not just rejecting God's morality and God's ways, but they're ridiculing it, scorning it, delighting in mocking it. And that's the flow, that's the current. And we really have to fight to go in the other direction. But then in verse 16, somebody else is introduced. "It will save you also from the adulteress, from the wayward wife with her seductive words, who has left the partner of her youth and ignored the covenant she made before God." Now, at one level, all those words could refer to an adulterous woman who's left her husband, the covenant of marriage that she made before God, and is seducing others. A sexually promiscuous society. That too is a very powerful current in our world today. But Proverbs has a subtle link here that just to anticipate. When we come to chapter 9, we find there's Lady Wisdom, who has built her pillars and is seated in the highest place of the city, speaking wisdom and calling people to come in and hear. Now, I wouldn't have known this but for reading some of the commentaries on Proverbs, but in its context, that really is a reference to the temple, the pillars, the house that wisdom has built on the very top of the hill in the city. Is Mount Zion in Jerusalem, the temple of God. And then, on contrast, there's the evil woman, Madam Folly, who has built her own house on tops of hills. And if you know your Old Testament, you'll know that on the top of the hills were the pagan shrines, very often associated with sexual immorality, but the shrines of the false gods, the Baals and the Asherahs that the people of Israel constantly went after and followed their ways. And I think that Proverbs 2, verse 16 here is actually saying, wisdom will save you from the deception and deceit of false religion, from the errors and the deadly, life-destroying, soul-destroying errors of false religion. Her house leads down to death, her paths to the spirits of the dead. None who go to her return or attain the paths of life. We live in a day, friends, when false religion, whether it's other religions known as religions, or whether it's the false anti-religion of our society, the empty assumptions, the Bible ridiculing God's commandments, denying teachings of the culture in which we live, false religion, anti-Christian, anti-biblical religion. And that is in the very air we breathe. It's in the sound waves that come into our ears. It's in the pictures on the television that we watch, the assumptions behind the movies we like, the stuff that's twittered and tweeted and Facebooked around us. And we need wisdom to discern between good and evil, between the truth of God and the error of the days. And of course, it's hard work because we're not dealing here with a little optional extra in life. We're dealing with something which affects life and death, which affects our eternity. If you get this wisdom, you will walk in the ways of good men and keep to the paths of the righteous. For the upright will live in the land. And the land, of course, was the promised land, which was a token of heaven itself. A picture of heaven. God saves his people from the Egypt of their sins, brings them into a land flowing with milk and honey, where they will live forever with him. Wisdom will safeguard your way to heaven. Rejecting wisdom, following the ways of the perverse and the wicked, will take you eventually to hell. And until you face the judgment of God, you have a battle, a daily, constant battle to be wise. And it's hard and ongoing work. One word of encouragement and then we'll finish. In this chapter, there's a tremendous central piece about God. If you do these things, then you will understand, verse 5, the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. There is wisdom. There is hope. You know, it's like people saying, if only I could get riches, I wouldn't have any more cares. If I could find a way to make money, and they're suckers for the latest scam investment, or this, that, or the other. It's sort of the looking for the gold at the end of the rainbow. It's never there. But here we're talking about something real. There is such a wisdom. If you search for it, you will find it. Seek and you will find. For God gives wisdom. He holds victory in store for the upright. It's there and it works. And how do we know it's there? How do we know it's worked? Because all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge are in Jesus Christ. And Jesus Christ is real. Jesus Christ is someone who has lived. He has died. These are facts. Jesus Christ is true. Jesus Christ is substantial. He's not a myth. He's not an idea. He is a living person, risen from the dead, alive today. If you were here last week, you can cook ice cream. Jesus did rise from the dead. However counterintuitive it may seem, there is no doubt about it. Our Lord Jesus Christ is alive. He is true. He is real. He works. And he is the way, the truth, and the life. In him are all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. God is committed, covenanted, promised to give wisdom to all who seek it through Jesus Christ. So just two questions to put to you as we finish. For the Christian, for the Bible, life is a long journey, a journey after wisdom. It's not a journey desperately, increasingly, hopelessly looking for something that we doubt exists. It's going after something that God has promised and which God reveals to us step by step, increasing us in the knowledge and enjoyment of wisdom. Two questions then. Number one, have you started the journey? Have you started the journey? Going back to those quotes at the beginning, there were what one of the ministers said was that he came to realize that there were so many people in his church who the preacher and the listener had assumed, oh yeah, that's true, yeah, we agree with that. But it hadn't actually gripped their lives. You may not sit there disagreeing with anything I've said today, but you may not have started the journey of the Christian life. You may be kind of sleepwalking through life. You may have an unthinking religion. You may be the sort of person that I say, yeah, have you got insurance for your house? Oh, yes. Show me. Oh, well, I've got it somewhere. Let me go and look for the certificate. Salvation is not a certificate you get once and stick in the drawer. It's something that you're working at all your days. Are you in earnest? Are you seriously active? Are you pursuing? Are you following hard after Jesus Christ? Seek and you will find. Knock and it'll be answered, will be opened unto you. Ask and you will be given. Are you asking, seeking, knocking? Are you pursuing? Or are you unwilling to go against that flow? Are you struggling, maybe like some of those young men in the quotes we read at the beginning, with things that are real barriers to you? And you feel you can't, you've never had the courage to speak about them to anybody. Because A, you think, well, nobody's ever had that problem. Or they'd be shocked or really horrified if I raised that with the minister or with somebody from the church. My friends, if there's some barrier holding you back, cry out, talk about it. Speak to us. Church leaders will respect your confidence, but they will be glad, as one broken person to another, to talk about what is holding you back. It's a safe place for the unconvinced, this church. Or other question is, well, you have started the journey. Are you struggling with it? Are you finding it hard? Are you finding it overwhelming? Tempted to say good, because it is a tough, daunting journey. Are you overwhelmed by the sorrows and pressures of this life? Are you weary of the work? Well, ask yourself, think about it, question that. Tim Keller has a lovely phrase and says, we should doubt our doubts. What is it that you're weary of? What is it that you're struggling with? What is it that's making you feel it's not worth it? Question it. Look it in the face. In what way is that a problem that God cannot cope with? In what way is that challenge or that pain in my life something that God cannot use? In what way is that a greater problem than Jesus faced when he went to the cross for me? Did you shudder at those opening stories? Did you feel they were getting a bit close to home? My friends, if you would have God's blessing and peace and joy in your life, then accept these words. Don't just say, oh yeah, agree with that, interesting sermon. Store them up. Turn your ears to wisdom. Apply your heart. Cry out for insight. Search as for hidden treasure. Then you will understand the fear of the Lord. You will find the knowledge of God. For God in Jesus gives wisdom. And from his mouth, from his word, from his book of Proverbs, from his own Son, come knowledge and understanding. He has victory stored up for all who follow him. Amen.